Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One,
Spotify,
and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, say, man, today's episode is brought to you by Clorox. And when it counts, trust Clorox. Personally, I mean, you know, if I'm speaking from my own experience, I like my home to be as safe as possible. Growing up, every time I smelled Clorox, I knew it meant clean, okay? I know that I can count on Clorox disinfectant products to give myself and my family the best home we deserve. You dig what I'm saying? When it counts, trust Clorox.
I'm a diverse individual.
All of this shit is real. Everybody like, what is it? Is he a family man? Is he a trapper? Is he a ladies man? Well, I'm all of it. All of it.
I beat your ass, kiss your girl, and go tuck my kids in. And then I show up and lead a march on the weekend.
It's all real. Real, real.
This is Expeditiously. I am Tip T.I. Harris. Now, the following experience is not a test. The conversations and stories expressed on this podcast are meant to be an expression of purpose and truth. This show, properly entitled Expeditiously, is a free exchange of ideas and opinions. No judgment, no preconceived beliefs, no fear. You're encouraged to share your thoughts and ask any question as long as it's done with respect. And that's through true love and respect for others that we will change the world and speak truth to power, one show at a time. Now, without further ado, this is Expeditiously. I'm Tip T.I. Harris. Okay, welcome to Expeditiously. I'm your host, Tip T.I. Harris. Now, here at Expeditiously, we have conversations that are intended to challenge our perspectives and push the culture forward. And we have those discussions with people who are relevant to that discussion. Our guest today, Ryan Millsap, the owner of Black Hall Studios, which is located right outside of East Atlanta, the home of movies like Venom, Jumanji, Godzilla, and more like, let's say, the new hit show Lovecraft Country. If you all heard of that, I'm sure you have. Black Hall has become one of Georgia's major film and TV production studios, which spans about 150 acres across two campuses. Ryan, tell me, how was Black Hall created and what led you into the notion of becoming a production studio?
Well, my background's all real estate. So commercial real estate and looking at ways to use land and facilities to meet the needs of end users.
Mm-hmm.
So historically, people use office space for whether it's law offices or businesses.
Right.
Industrial space like Amazon for distribution.
Right.
But when you think of it, like a hospital is specialty real estate.
Right.
Being used to be a place where you can conduct medicine.
Right.
And movie studios are no different. They're just a place where you make movies and television. And so I got into that space really, I mean, by accident originally and then really intentionally later. And the way it happened was after Lehman Brothers failed in 2008, then the commercial real estate market fell apart. And so in 2010, 11, 12, 13, I bought about 8,000 apartments.
Mm.
All when things were a mess, downturn.
Yeah,
and I bought all of those.
Best time to buy.
It was a good
time. Could you please tell the people that is the best time to buy when the world goes to shit?
That is the best time to buy.
That's when everybody's, you know, jumping off the top of buildings. Nobody thinks it's ever going to be a good day again. That's when everybody loses all hope. And that's when the patient capital. Okay, that's when they come in and make acquisitions for pennies on the dollar. And that's how you came in to those 8,000 some odd apartments. Units. Okay.
Yeah, there's an old phrase on Wall Street. Say, you never want to be hoping when you should be fearing. And you never want to be fearing when you should see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, buy when there's blood in the streets.
There was a lot of blood in 2010, 11, 12, 13.
Right. It started in 8, though.
It started in 8, but you know the way that a real estate market works often is that when the market seizes up from liquidity, so there's nobody that has any money to buy,
right?
And the money kind of seizes, then it takes a time period for the people that own the real estate that need to sell
mm-hmm.
to come to terms with the fact that whatever they thought their property was worth Yeah. It's not worth that anymore.
That's what we're waiting through right now.
It feels like that.
Yeah, we're waiting through that right now in the midst of the effects of the pandemic, you know. We're here. I hear that you're expanding.
We are.
The DeKalb County Commission has voted to swap green space with Black Hall.
Well, yeah, they voted.
Yeah.
Well, they voted to swap land.
Okay.
But they're swapping my green space for their green space, so it's really just land for land.
Okay. And how does that, you know, it seems like a win for both parties. You know what I mean? It seems like, you know, some mutually advantageous.
I think so. The guy who came up with this idea is a planner.
Okay.
And he came to me and he'd done some overlay analysis of the whole area. And he said, hey, I see you own that land mm-hmm. on Boulder Crest, and I see you're planning to build more stages up there.
Right.
What would you think about building those down on Constitution Road to keep all the truck traffic on Constitution, keep it off of Boulder Crest, which mm-hmm. is where people live, and then taking a piece of property that is zoned industrial, that's currently a park, but it's not used a lot,
right?
And then swapping it for your land that sits next to all the houses, that would be a better regional park.
Okay.
And I said, I'm open to that. I said, what does the county think? He goes, well, you know, I've talked to him about it, and they seem to really like it. And I said, okay, well, how long do you think it would take? And he said, I don't know. I think it'd probably take like 4 months. That was 2.5 years ago.
Damn.
I know. Well, I told him at the time, I said, listen, a fast no is the second best answer.
That's right. That's
right. Because it's the maybes that'll kill you.
You don't like, want to be yes all the way until no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you got to be in a position where you know what your future looks like. And on this deal, it just kept dragging out and dragging out. And I stuck with it largely because I believed in the vision that the planner, his name's Jay Scott,
mm-hmm.
that Jay laid out, convincing me that this was the better thing to do for all, both pieces of land
right.
for the next 50 years for the community.
Gotcha. And you know, should this go through as planned, it would make Black Hall one of the largest movie studios in America.
It'll actually make it, from a soundstage perspective, it'd make it the largest studio in the English-speaking world.
In the English-speaking world.
All right. To give you an example, so like right now we have about 210,000 square feet of sound stages, 850,000 square feet in total.
Mm-hmm.
Pinewood has about 300,000 mm-hmm. of sound stages. Tyler has about 240,
mm-hmm.
and we're getting ready to add another 450.
Oh.
So then we'd end
you
up
doing
with,
that much business?
Oh, we're ripping. It's been fantastic.
Jeez, I'm telling you, y'all need y'all take y'all public.
Well, we're too small to be public
you're
right
too
now.
Too small to be public.
But we're actually in the process.
Well, not after you do these upgrades, I'm sure.
Well, even just with the upgrade, with the expansion in Atlanta, it wouldn't be enough to go public.
Mm.
But we have $400 million of development in London right now.
Okay.
We've got the $200 million expansion in Atlanta, and then you know we're building a $250 million facility in L.A. as well.
Oh, that's amazing.
So you know the plan is to build about $1.5 billion, $2 billion worth of stuff over the next 5 years, and then take that all public as a specialty REIT.
Hey, say, man, today's episode is brought to you by Clorox. And when it counts, trust Clorox. The same way we trust essential workers to provide the care that they give to us, our families, trust us to give them a safe and protected home. Personally, I mean, you know, if I'm speaking from my own experience, I like my home to be as safe as possible. Growing up, every time I smelled Clorox, I knew it meant clean, okay? I knew it meant that whatever was on the surface was going to be not that. And it's going to be germ-free. Years later, I still trust Clorox. Our community heroes trust Clorox to keep places like hospitals and grocery stores disinfected. So I know that I, too, could trust Clorox to provide a safe environment at home that we all can enjoy. That's why I trust Clorox regular bleach. By mixing a third cup of Clorox and regular bleach with a gallon of water, man, you know what I mean? That's, you know, that's kind of like the antidote. I know that I can count on Clorox disinfectant products to give myself and my family the best home we deserve. You dig what I'm saying? For me, it's important to share with loved ones and the public in general how they can give the most care for their loved ones. Because when it counts, trust Clorox. You know, the thing about the expansion, although it seems mutually advantageous at first glance, everybody is not necessarily on board 100%. Some residents say that the move doesn't allow input from those living in the area. Others say it's bad for the environment. Comments or your what's your perspective?
Well, it's really, I mean, it's been really a fascinating study in race, actually, this swap. Because my neighbors are, it's an all black neighborhood.
Okay.
And I've gotten to be friends with all of these, the leaders of these different neighborhood communities.
The MPUs.
Yeah. And they, the MPUs that are the local black residents love this. They've been begging DeKalb County for decades for more economic development.
Okay.
Right? Because it's kind of, it's been an area that's been largely forgotten.
Okay, and you're talking about right over there by the jail.
Exactly right. Well, you know, the jail is our neighbor.
Yeah, that was my address for a while.
I remember you telling me that when you came out to tour.
Yeah, that was my address for a while, man. You know, I didn't notice your studio while I was...
Well, no, too, it's not that jail. It's not that jail.
Which one?
The one, because the one, the ones that sit next to us are a minimum security women's prison.
Oh, no, I ain't been there.
And the other one is a juvenile detention center. So unless
So you must be further down the street from, you know, from the pen.
Exactly right. So the pen is on the other side of Moreland.
Got it.
And we're on the east side of Moreland.
Okay, all right.
So... what's been fascinating about it is that the support for this and what pushed this through was the black commissioners supporting their black residents who wanted to see this happen,
right?
Fighting against one white commissioner and a lot of her white constituents who took it up upon themselves to be against this when they're not even the residents who live nearby.
Well, what is the basis For their concerns? What is it?
I think that, you know, the primary thing that people have voiced opposition to is the notion that the county would take land that they own and swap it with a developer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this process, the county's getting 13 extra acres.
Mm.
So I'm giving them 53 acres.
Okay, and they're giving you 40.
Exactly right.
Okay, so... but why is it any of their business? Like, why do they care? Like, what is the argument that's being made that justifies them telling the county how to handle county business?
Well, I think what you found is, you know, they voted and the commissioners voted 5-1 to approve it.
Mm.
So I think in general, the county commissioners didn't hear a very strong argument.
Right.
But I'll tell you philosophically what it is they fundamentally just don't want to see counties making these kind of discretionary decisions.
But why?
Because they feel like government has failed them in the past, and they're skeptical of government decision making.
Okay, I can kind of understand where that's coming from. It doesn't seem as preposterous at first. Now. You know, Georgia has become the number one state for film and television productions. A lot to do with the tax credits. How is it being, like, I guess being in competition with other film studios like Tyler or Pinewood? You were, like, in existence before either of those, correct?
No, the guys that started this whole thing were Pinewood.
I mean,
there were smaller studios prior to that.
Okay.
So there was the pre-Pinewood era where we had a movie industry here, but it was smaller movies, smaller television shows, and it didn't have the scale.
Right.
And when Dan Cathy built Pinewood,
right,
which was, he opened in 2014.
Dan Cathy, he owns Chick-fil-A. Yeah, that's the Chick-fil-A gentleman. And now that's the thing. Is Pinewood open on Sundays?
I believe Pinewood is open on Sundays.
So wait a minute, Mr. Cathy. Let me ask you something now. Why is it that if it's a ground of religion or morality, if Chick-fil-A is closed on Sunday, why is Pinewood not also closed on Sunday?
Now, I've heard Dan talk about this.
Okay, and what did he say?
And what he talked about was that originally Chick-fil-A wasn't closed on Sundays for religious reasons.
Oh, yeah? Well, what was the reason?
They had one shop.
Ooh.
His mom and dad ran it, and they were tired.
They just needed a day off.
Okay, that was it. Well, that they needed a day off, and they wanted to, and they did want to go to church, and they did want to hang out with their family, and they did want to have family dinner, etc. But originally, it was a practical move to not be completely exhausted.
Got it.
Right?
So now, what's up now?
Well, I think traditionally it became like a thing.
Okay.
And they felt like they were doing so well.
Uh-huh.
And they were honoring this kind of day of rest.
Right.
Which certainly there's a Old Testament precedent for a seventh day of rest.
Sure.
And so I think they just said, you know, this is working.
Right.
We should rest one day of the week.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so there's obviously people who observe a Sabbath for religious reasons.
Right.
And then there are other people who observe a Sabbath for the health of their soul.
Health and wellness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can go with that. I can go with that.
So I think when it comes to Pinewood, I think he built it from the beginning to be a facility for production companies to come and ply their craft.
Okay.
So he wasn't running it day to day.
Right.
And so, you know, you can have shifts and whatever. And so there was no tradition that was tied to his parents who started Chick-fil-A.
Okay.
Right. And so he could kind of just do what made practical sense.
Got you. Now, tell me, how is the community of film studios here in Atlanta? Do you guys work pretty, effortlessly with one another?
Yeah, I'd say like I have a great relationship with the guys at Pinewood. Dan mm-hmm. has become a friend of mine in this process, mm-hmm. and I think he's a really fantastic human being. He's been so good to me. He's been a kind competitor. He's been a generous competitor. Now, obviously, he's very, very rich. So,
you know, obviously,
he has.
Well, you're all very rich, Ryan. You're all very rich.
In relative terms, we're all doing great.
You're all doing phenomenally.
Yeah. But I promise you, when it comes to Dan or Tyler, I'm the poorest guy on the block.
Maybe on paper, you know. And what about Tyler, like, coming into the game? Like, he's the most recent.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, the way that it worked is that I watched Dan open Pinewood.
Okay.
They had huge amounts of success.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel came in, started using the facility, which brought a lot of the vendors, which then created an ecosystem.
Right.
Then the ecosystem we live in today, where there's tens of thousands of crew base here in Atlanta. There's great vendors everywhere from, you know, lighting and grip to heavy machinery.
Okay.
That's all catering to the industry. And so it allowed the industry to grow rapidly.
Okay.
Once there was one major facility.
Got it.
But so I looked at that as a real estate guy, and I said, well, if that works in Fayetteville, which is a long ways away from town.
True.
I never go to Fayetteville. You probably never go to Fayetteville.
Only people who live in Fayetteville go to Fayetteville.
Only people who live there.
Yeah.
So I said, if that works in Fayetteville, what if we built Pinewood in the city? And that became the basic thesis for why to build Black Hall. And that being said, it's a big deal to spec build a specialty real estate project, because if you're wrong, there aren't alternative uses.
Okay.
So you're in big, big trouble.
Right.
So then the play became, if I can build a studio that I believe can be the number one studio in the state, then I'll take that risk.
Okay.
So if I can take the mantle from Pinewood of the first place people want to be, then it's worth taking the risk. But if you're going to be number two, that's a bad place to be. Now, there's enough business right now, number one, number two, number three, number four.
Right.
Right. Everybody's full.
Right.
But if there's ever a problem, you don't want to be number five, because it all then, you know, draws up.
That's right.
And so one and two and three might be full, but four, five, and six might be empty.
So how do you guys interact with independent filmmakers? And how do you, like, you know, make adjustments as needed, you know, to ground level independent filmmakers, producers, directors, so on and so forth?
I don't think any independent films have been made at Black Hall. At
this what? Point. Why not?
Well,
that's what keeps this thing moving.
Well, so space wise, mm-hmm. I can accommodate three major films at any one time.
Okay.
And so when Disney, Sony, Warner Brothers, HBO, Universal, Netflix,
right.
Lionsgate.
So who comes first with the money?
And so, yeah. You know, on the independent side, very few independent movies are made inside of sound stages. They're mostly made on location because of budget issues, constraints.
Yeah.
Right? You have to get into the realm of probably a $30 million film before you seriously consider a purpose-built soundstage complex like Black Hall or Pinewood or Tyler Perry. Now, Tyler's slightly different because he makes so much of his own stuff.
Right.
So his facility's being used all the time for his own projects.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of stuff inexpensively. He's a master of it.
Sure.
So that's a unique situation in that you have really an independent producer owning a facility where he also leases it out to other producers.
Yeah, I guess there's a bit of a niche.
It is.
If you will. Hey, listen, man, support from their podcast come from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, I said free. And if it's free, give me three. No subscription, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, all your binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. So what are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app on Android, iPhone, Roku, Fire TV. All right, Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free. You dig? Now, I hear that there's a secret studio that is in reading in the UK.
Oh, it's not secret. It's been announced. Yeah,
it's already been announced.
That's the studio we're building just outside of London.
Okay.
It's a big facility. It's a 1,000,003 square feet.
Geez.
It's about 400,000 or 500,000 square feet of sound stages, depending on how the final layout ends up.
Mm.
And it'll be a beautiful, incredible facility that hasn't been built in London in a long time. Pinewood was built 80 years ago.
So how long do you have to be doing well in this business in order for you to expand not only the initial studio that you introduced, but to expand internationally and do a 1,000,000+ square foot project in the UK? How long do you have to do that well?
Well, you don't have to do it well for any length of time. If you have the money, then you can do it. Right?
Well, rich people stay rich by strategically justifying their moves with the profits and losses of their last move.
That's right.
So that's what I'm saying. So, you know, being a savvy businessman in real estate primarily, mm-hmm. but understanding now the new intricacies of film, television production, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to work through the kinks and get out of the mindset of real estate and into the mindset as a owner and operator of a film studio?
It is real estate, so I never have to leave that mentality. So think about, like, I had a portfolio of apartments.
Mm-hmm.
Those apartments, they roll over about 50% a year.
Okay.
So if you have 8,000, you've got to lease 4,000 apartments a year to stay full.
Right.
That's what real estate is. It's creating spaces and filling them up.
Renting space. Gotcha.
And so building a movie studio is a specialty niche inside of real estate where I built a facility for the use of these major producers and they lease it from me for the length of the time of their production. Mm-hmm. And then they hand it back to me and I give it to somebody else. Mm. So I already had the expertise to run a facility like that because I'd owned lots of different kinds of real estate prior.
Okay. Now, on top of all of that, I hear that you're also a girl dad.
I am. I have three daughters.
Yeah. You know, I have three daughters, too.
How old are your daughters?
4, 19, and 24.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Daughters are magic.
I have four sons, too.
I remember reading that.
Yeah. But my daughters are definitely a gift. Definitely a gift, a blessing to behold.
They are the heart for a dad.
It's definitely a different energy.
I agree with
you
that.
You know, I love all my children, but daughters are just special.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mine are 16, 14, and 10.
Jeesh.
And so they're magical.
Fun times.
I haven't had any of the experience that sometimes people talk about teenage daughters.
Right.
Now, my ex-wife sometimes, you know, I think she gets a little bit more of the blunt end of that.
Mm.
But, I mean, my experience has just been the magical energy of daughter love.
Now, you say ex-wife.
My ex-wife.
Okay, so when did you get divorced?
I got divorced 7 years ago.
7 years ago. Where were you in the process of Black Hall?
Hadn't even started it.
Hadn't even started.
That's right, yeah.
Now, wife wouldn't let you do it, huh?
No. My ex-wife definitely did not love my career.
Oh.
Because it's very unruly. Like, being an entrepreneur, whether you're a music entrepreneur or a real estate entrepreneur, the life is unpredictable.
You have to move with the money at the speed of opportunity.
She used to say to me, she'd say, "Can't we just have dinner together one night a week?" I say, "Absolutely. I just don't know which day."
but after you got divorced and she sees the success of Black Hall, what is the consensus now? How does she feel about it?
I don't think she was very happy about the divorce, and I think she's still not happy about the divorce.
Mm.
But they have a great life, and I take as good a care of them as I possibly can.
Of
I think their life
do.
Is really good. And
I mean,
you
how
know,
do you,
what do you do when you decide that that the life with a particular person is not the life for you?
How do you know that though? Just by disagreement?
No,
or?
I think that goes to the wisdom of the body,
right?
So the wisdom of the body is all the knowledge that you have that's below your neck,
okay.
Right? So the wisdom you get from your chest,
okay.
The wisdom you get from your gut,
right.
And the wisdom you get from your loins,
okay.
That knowledge base is what
instinct.
It's whatever you want to call it. Like this is the soul,
right?
This is the feeling. This is the vision. This is the imagination.
Without being coerced by the brain,
I think the brain is overused.
Man, well, maybe more so for some than others.
Fair enough. But I think that the brain is really a tool, and that tool only has value if the heart, you're in touch with your heart enough to have a compass.
Yeah.
So your heart gives you imagination and gives you the path toward the life that you dream of.
Okay.
And the brain helps you get there.
Right.
But the brain is terrible at trying to figure out what happiness looks like.
Right. So it's like, oddly enough, the heart is vision and the brain is execution.
Agreed.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The heart is what makes you say, I want to tell the world a story.
So tell me what happened? What was it, the moment where you just woke up and say, man... And you speak, you know, like you're very cordial and respectful.
We have a great relationship.
That's a blessing. That's a blessing, even in divorce. But what was the moment that made you say, I got to go?
I mean, it wasn't one period. I mean, there were lead up to like the final moments.
Right.
But really, it was years of pain in my chest.
Like
it was years of gut-wrenching.
Discomfort.
Discomfort.
Damn.
Where my home became a place that I didn't want to be. And I found myself leaving early for work and staying late, going on as many business trips as I could possibly dream up, and finding myself when I pulled back into the house, feeling like the air had been sucked out of my.
Did you try cheating?
Yeah. I didn't until the end.
You didn't until the end.
Yeah, I didn't until the end.
Well, God
and
bless
the
you.
End. And the end really was, I met a girl.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't know, I'm really attracted to this girl. And I was just like, I'm going to date this girl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flying home.
Right.
And I'm leaving my wife.
And that's
so there was
did.
No like overlap. There wasn't, you know, I mean, there was an end of the marriage for
okay.
sure that was catalyzed by me meeting a girl.
Gotcha.
But there was no lying, deception. It was just, I'm out.
In order to be happily married, you must be willing to sacrifice your own wants, wishes, and desires for someone else's. And that goes both ways.
I actually disagree with that.
I do. I mean, that's that unless you just, well, unless you believe in the whole soulmate meant to be together, like just running to the person who likes exactly what you like and does exactly what you do. I don't think that's necessary. I mean, I think it's like that for a period of time, but unless you guys are connected cerebrally, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And unless your steps are guided by the same passion, by the same ambition, eventually you will evolve into your own individual versions of yourself, and you never know where that lands you. You know what I'm saying? The things that I'm into today, like for instance, a podcast. I wasn't doing a podcast when I first met my wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The things that she's deciding to do right now, there's a lot of things that she's doing now that she wasn't doing when we first met.
Right.
So our ambition and our wants and desires and the things that we want for ourselves led us to a place that the other would just have to kind of compromise and deal with it. And unless, I guess, we would end up like you. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I think that people should only stay together as long as they have peace and true happiness and joy.
That's temporary.
I don't believe that.
All of that, this is like a destination. To me, I feel like what you just said, peace, happiness, joy, that is like an escalator in a mall, okay? You go to a mall and then you're looking for something. It's like, hey,
there it is. It's up there. Then you hit the escalator. You're like, oh, man, this is peace. It's happening. I'm happy. This is real joy. Oh, time to get off. And then you look for the next escalator.
So you think it's really fleeting.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that the more you understand that you don't expect happiness across the board all the time.
Right.
The more you understand it, okay, it's going to be tough times. It's just like, if you ever play football.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. If you play football, you know, you're going to have great games. You're going to have good plays. You're going to have bad games. You're going to lose.
That's right.
You have to practice, be willing to get back up, get back into it. But if you lose a game and you're like, man, fuck it, I don't want to do it anymore, then that means you weren't really meant to play football. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I think of it more like this. If you have great teammates.
Okay.
Then there's joy.
Okay.
In every outcome.
I agree with that as well. We are a culmination of our experiences, and the people around us provide the energy that keep us there. You know what I mean? People around us provide the energy that make us want to stay, make us want mm-hmm. to work hard. Mm-hmm. And the memories that we created in the past is like, okay, man, I don't want to throw all that shit away when I could just like really work at it. I ain't never really thought that, like, if this shit don't work for me, I'm never doing it again. Never doing it again.
No, I get that.
Ever.
No, I understand.
Ever. I don't want to even sacrifice, you know, that much of myself to anyone else. I don't want to have to.
But maybe.
I don't want to have to succumb to anyone else ever in life.
If a woman is asking you to succumb.
Well, no, they don't ask.
No, what I'm saying is if they're demanding it in their action, then that's unacceptable.
I think every man has to succumb if they want to be happy in marriage. You know what I mean? I think everybody, not even every man, everybody, everyone. She succumbs to me, I succumb to her, we succumb to each other.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Hopefully you're succumbing together.
Yeah, man, well, you know what I'm saying? We pick and choose, you know what I mean? We take turns, you know? I think it's her turn right now. I'm the one succumbing at this moment in time.
Well, there's two different theories, right? There's the theory that marriage is something to be endured.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And there's a theory that relationships are only intended for as long as they actually have peace, happiness, and joy.
Right.
So
But see, I wouldn't have the peace, happiness, and joy of today if I would have left because of the absence of peace, happiness, and joy last year, year before, the year before. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, but that required some vision.
True.
So something inside of you said, if I just stick out. So let's go back to the football analogy.
Okay.
Right? If you have great teammates that you trust,
mm-hmm.
that you like warring alongside,
right.
that you feel like you can count on, that they have your back, and they're gonna lay down their life
right.
to try to get you in that end zone.
That's right.
Right? Then if you lose together, there's still a bond and a beauty.
Right.
You still have stories for the rest of your life.
Sure.
You still have friendships that survive all outcomes.
Right.
Now, obviously, if you start winning, that's a fun momentum.
But when you lose, you're going to have a shitty time, and nobody's going to enjoy being around each other, and it's really going to be fucked up. Everybody's going to look at everything that everyone else did wrong when you're losing.
That's bad culture.
I mean,
that's bad coaching.
It's human nature.
Well, it's human nature.
It's just like for marriage.
It's human nature unevolved. Right? Because sports, in their truest, most beautiful place,
okay,
we enter the moment and we give everything we possibly can to victory.
Mm.
But then when the whistle blows, when the scoreboard time says 0-0-0,
mm-hmm.
then we shake hands and we go prepare to try to win the next one, whether we won, lost, or otherwise.
This is true.
Because really, that's the place that is often forgotten. And I think entrepreneurs might live in that space even more because
right.
entrepreneurs somewhere had a vision.
Right.
And they said, I'm going to go embark on trying to get to that vision.
Right.
Now, what we realize as entrepreneurs is you never actually get to the vision.
It's a process.
It's a
journey. Yeah.
But if you're going toward what you really dream about,
mm-hmm.
what your heart really desires,
right.
then you have joy and happiness because you're trying to get where you want to go.
That makes sense.
Right? Whereas yeah. if you're enduring,
you're enjoying the process of actually taking the steps that get you closer to what your vision is.
The moment you lose respect in a relationship, the mm. moment you lose vision in a relationship, then you can't have joy in the hardship because you can't imagine the end being worth it. Whereas the reason you can endure everything you've endured as an entrepreneur is because you believed the end would be worth it, even if you've never gotten to the place you really dreamed about.
Right,
which you've achieved all kinds of your dreams.
Right.
But there might be a place that you haven't got to, but it doesn't matter because you know that you'd rather die trying.
That's right.
Than not go for it.
Hey, man, I can agree with that. I can deal with that.
In a relationship, if you lose the vision where you say, I'd rather die trying to make this work.
Right.
Than leave.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right?
That makes sense. So when you decided that you wanted to leave, like, did she say, no, fuck no, I don't want to go?
Well, I didn't ask her to leave. I just...
No, I'm saying, yeah. I know, when you said that you wanted to leave, was her response like, no, what the fuck you mean? It's not
she
over
was,
to...
Yeah, she was not happy. Very, yeah. very pissed about it.
And
but I told
you
her
you guys
I had
remained cordial I, with, throughout
well, listen,
that.
I mean, we had a very difficult divorce process. We had, you know, she's had a lot of anger toward me.
Damn.
But she's worked really, really hard. And I've watched her become a deeper person. And a better person, and a better mother, and a better friend, and a better everything.
Any chance y'all might be able to reconcile?
No chance. No chance. It was just gone for me. I mean, literally, it was just gone. It was gone way before I left.
How'd it work out with the girl
enduring.
You met?
What's that?
The young lady that you met. How'd it work out with her?
We had a wonderful, beautiful relationship that wasn't meant for the long term.
Okay,
right?
Gotcha.
I mean, it was
reasons
it was a
and
deep,
seasons.
Reasons and seasons. I mean, we had a deep, deep connection that couldn't overcome all the practical problems.
Gotcha.
Is sometimes the way it goes.
Well, that makes sense. I appreciate you for your candor, man. You know what I'm saying? As always, we love to just have an opportunity to explore through other lenses besides our own how to work through alternative ways of solving God problems. You know what I'm saying? If I could use my pain, my struggle, or at least the testimony of that and share it so someone who's going through a similar time can help themselves through, then that made my struggle worth it. So thank you for sharing your pain.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad to do it.
Right on, man. So during COVID, I learned that you gave lots of money to Emory healthcare providers to pay for lunches.
That's a how'd you find that out?
Yeah, man, I'm doing my research here.
Nice work.
I do my research here, man. Yeah. And you also have some other philanthropic efforts. You care to share?
Well, I mean, the effort that you were talking about actually was put together by a group of guys, of which, you know, these are friends of mine.
Okay.
And they were the ones who came up with the idea. I just contributed money.
Okay.
And they contributed money.
Well, a lot of times that's more than enough.
It was beautiful. I mean, the idea was they partnered with a couple barbecue places in town.
Okay.
And they set up meal prep.
Okay.
And then delivered these meals in COVID compliant ways to all of the healthcare workers.
Gotcha.
And so they were providing like kind of alternative meals.
Mm-hmm.
Cause imagine you're at the hospital every day. Like,
right.
You're probably eating the same stuff.
Yeah, it probably suck, man. Probably just like a fucking mess hall at a latrine or something like that.
Even if it was great, you can't do the
every
same
day.
Thing every day.
Yeah.
Just like at some point, that great chicken sandwich is still,
it's still just, you
had it 7 days in a row.
You know what I mean? It's just a fucking chicken sandwich at this point.
Right.
Okay, listen, man. The holidays are here. And everybody want to know, man, who's made their wish list. Our sponsor today has the number one wish for the gift of the year. They say Manscaped, the best in men's below and above the belt grooming. Manscaped is here to ensure that you're taking care of all of the things you need to take care of and your partners appreciate it, all right? Naughty or nice, 'tis the season to perform, but before you unwrap your gift, you might want to make sure that you have your landscaped with Manscaped, okay? The Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer is part of the Manscaped Performance Package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle that makes for the perfect gift. The bundle includes the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, the best trimmer on the market, and the Weed Whacker, ear, nose, and hair trimmer. Tis the season to Manscaped to get yourself, your dad, your brother, your friends, whoever, man. Get them the best performance package, all right? Because if they're going to perform, they need to have a freshly groomed package. So, Manscaped, get 20% off plus free shipping with the code TIP at manscaped.com. Check this out. I'm going to say it again. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code TIP at manscaped.com. All right? What you waiting for, man? Go get yourself together. Manscaped. But next time you do something like that, please include Bankhead Seafood. We would love to be a part of however we can help the community and, you know, pay it forward. So, you know, please keep us in mind.
Absolutely.
What do you see in the future for not just Black Hall, but for the industry in Atlanta or in Georgia? What's the evolution or the transition?
Well, the evolution is at some point the capital base in Georgia mm-hmm. needs to learn how to make money in movie and television that's not just real estate. Mm. So this is a real estate town.
Right.
People understand real estate. I had investors that are, you know, I still have some investors that are local money mm-hmm. that have really enjoyed being in part of the studio as a real estate space,
okay.
as a real estate play, as a real estate investment. But the next big evolution is for capital that's Georgia-based capital to understand production.
Okay.
Right now, the way that this business works is the ideas are largely conceived in Los Angeles
okay.
by development teams employed by all these major production houses.
Yeah.
The productions that then get greenlit are funded by California money.
Okay.
They ship the production to Georgia for manufacturing.
Right.
Right. So they bring the money and they drop $3 billion a year into our economy
okay.
and make movies and television.
But they also ship in most of their the talent.
Not anymore.
They don't?
No. So about 80% of a crew base is local Georgians.
So since when? How long has it been that way? Because
it
I remember
gets more every year. But a lot of that is because Georgia is such an amazing place to live compared to L.A. or New York.
Right.
Right. I mean, I lived in L.A. all my adult life until 7 years ago.
Mm.
And I will tell you, L.A. is a fantastic place to visit. And I love going to L.A.
Right. I'm the other way around.
You really?
Yeah, I'm the other way around. I mean, don't get me wrong. Atlanta's always going to be home. Georgia, you know, Atlanta specifically. The rest of Georgia, well, you know.
Well, that's
a little
different.
On the, you know, a little on the, you know, racist side, most of the places. But you know what I'm saying?
You would
but
know better than I would.
For the
that,
I, yeah. Probably. Yeah. but Atlanta is a great place with, you know, just a phenomenal energy, man. And you really get the vibe or the notion that anything is possible here.
I agree with that.
You really do get anything is possible here. Atlanta's not a place where if you have aspirations to be anything, whether it's an architect or an actress or an athlete, you'd never feel like, oh, I have to move out of this place so I can get this done for myself. You can do anything here. You can do anything here, and that's magical. But I go to L.A., though, and I've had a house in L.A. since 2007, 2006, maybe. And it's a different kind of energy.
It is.
I feel more creative sometimes in the space of just conception of ideas or mm-hmm. or even like film scripts, stories, concepts and all that kind of shit. You know, I feel a little more productive in that area in LA.
So in the creative space, there's a much greater creative vortex
mm-hmm.
that's been created in L.A.
Okay.
by film and television and music
right.
for the last 100
years. I'd rather make my music in Atlanta, though. I'd rather make my music in
so
Atlanta.
So do you write music in L.A. or what do you?
I do. Yeah, I do it anywhere, anytime, for any reason, with anyone. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They don't have any real, like, you know, ain't no specifics on that. No criteria. It's just, all I need is me, the mic, and the music, for real. And, yeah, I could do it anywhere. But I believe the energy, the vibe, like, it feels more appropriate or it feels more natural, effortless in Atlanta. I don't know.
The music
know
side.
The music.
Maybe your music is telling the story.
True.
Of your life experience that's Atlanta
perhaps.
Based.
Maybe it's those that
that's what I think.
Below
yeah.
the neck.
Below the neck.
Knowledge.
Wisdom.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah, yeah. I think, you know, it has a little bit to do with it. But even when I'm in LA and I have like thoughts of writing scripts and things like that, the stories all come from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the uniqueness of Atlanta doesn't dawn on me until I'm outside of the city.
I think that's probably true, but I think also when I think about, so there is a very robust black creative vortex in Atlanta.
Right.
Right? Amazingly so.
It is.
Whereas in LA, it's people from all over the world, so it's a different kind of creative vortex.
Right.
So there's a magic in Atlanta.
Right.
There's also a particular magic in Atlanta, at least this is me observing.
Mm-hmm.
There seems like a particular magic in Atlanta about being black. In Atlanta.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? This is like the cultural center,
right.
the cultural
this is where it pays
foundation.
Off. This is where the culture pays off.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
coming to Atlanta, this is where it actually pays off. Like, you know, other places, it pays off to compromise the culture. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So you go other places and, you know what I'm saying, you can kind of get paid for shucking and jiving and kind of just bullshitting around and not really playing it how it go. You get rewarded for that in other places. Here, you get rewarded
for being raw,
for staying solid. You know what I'm saying? Just
what keep, do you mean by staying solid?
Staying solid is, you know, remaining, walking in your truth.
Walking your truth. That's what I meant by being raw.
You know what I'm saying? Just
being real,
sticking to your path. Mm-hmm. You know, unapologetically, regardless of, you know, how unconventional it may seem to others.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the energy that is in that, if you take that to LA and people say, "Oh man, this is really cool. We should try this." You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah,
golly.
That's right.
You know, this is just crazy enough to work.
That's right.
Whoever thought keeping it real.
That's right.
Shit.
That's right.
And I think that, you know, the infrastructure in Atlanta hasn't grown yet to be as vast and expansive as it is in LA. You know.
So that's our next evolution.
From the Netflix to Warner Brothers, Sony, Universal, you know, all of these different places where you could go and kind of like, you know, create opportunity from just ideas.
That's development. Right?
Absolutely.
So that's the development side of this business, which development has to be funded by capital.
Right.
So capital in LA knows how to make money off of movies and television and music and whatever, like all this creative industry.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Atlanta has not been a place. Apart from the black creative vortex,
right?
So there's this small vortex that is the microcosm of the black creative vortex in Atlanta that makes money.
Right.
But outside of that, there's not a creative class really in Atlanta. And L.A. is a thriving industry of a creative class that's just making content that's not just music content.
Right.
I mean, obviously, Tyler's changing that.
Right.
But Tyler's kind of vibing off of the black creative vortex.
Right.
Right. We don't have a white Tyler Perry in Atlanta. But if you go to L.A., there's hundreds of them.
Hey, say, man, today's episode is brought to you by Clorox. And when it counts, trust Clorox. The same way we trust essential workers to provide the care that they give to us, our families, trust us to give them a safe and protected home. Personally, I mean, you know, if I'm speaking from my own experience, I like my home to be as safe as possible. Growing up, every time I smelled Clorox, I knew it meant clean. OK, I knew it meant that whatever was on the surface was going to be not that. And it's going to be germ-free. Years later, I still trust Clorox. Our community heroes trust Clorox to keep places like hospitals and grocery stores disinfected. So I know that I, too, could trust Clorox to provide a safe environment at home that we all can enjoy. That's why I trust Clorox regular bleach. By mixing a third cup of Clorox and regular bleach with a gallon of water, man, you know what I mean? That's, you know, that's kind of like the antidote. I know that I can count on Clorox disinfecting products to give myself and my family the best home we deserve. You dig what I'm saying? For me, it's important to share with loved ones and the public in general how they can give the most care for their loved ones. Because when it counts, trust Clorox. You don't have many Tyler Perrys in L.A. You don't have many Tyler Perrys. You have Will Packer. And, you know, of course, you have like people like Fuqua and Coogler.
Mm-hmm.
But very, very few. You know what I mean? Even those guys, you know. They far and few in between. You know what I don't like about L.A. or the infrastructure in L.A. when it comes to film and television? I don't like that, let's just say, someone like me who's an expert in the culture, expert in whatever world I'm presenting, to have to seek validation and approval from someone who's completely removed from the culture that I'm speaking of. And, okay, so the reason that this is important, if I may, is because you aren't aware. It's important because you aren't aware. So if your reasoning for not investing is, I don't know what it is, I'm not aware, that's the fucking point.
That's exactly right.
You know what I'm saying?
But you have to find capital that's contrary. So just like, just like when you build a movie studio in Atlanta, that is countercultural to capital in real estate.
Okay.
Because they don't know anything about it.
Right.
So if the capital markets don't exist.
Mm.
So the capital markets have to evolve inside of entertainment to make the kind of content that you're imagining.
Sure.
Which means you got to go find the money that gets the vision and takes that risk with you.
It's a damn shame, too, because I look at careers like Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a Richard Pryor movie. Look, I'm a huge fan, man. Love him to death. But I saw where his career began to decline.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to like, why was someone so great? What is it? Like, it, you know, I refuse to believe that it's, you know, his incidents and the drugs and this, that, and the other. I refuse to believe that because I've seen so many other white people do that and thrive. You mm-hmm. dig what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But as I analyze it, it's because Richard Pryor never got an opportunity to do a film speaking to black people about how black people live.
Mm-hmm.
Never got an opportunity to do it. I saw this movie that he did. It was called Moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at this damn film, and I'm like, man, black people don't live like this. Why do they got Richard Pryor? Why is Richard Pryor playing this square fucking green, this, I guess a carbon copy of a black man that happens to be in a prestigious position, but black, he didn't, it just, and it didn't
connect.
You felt
like it was a white conception of a black experience.
It was a white person's opinion of how they think black people are and live, and he had to fit within that in order for him to make films.
And you think eventually it
even
took
like
his
the toy.
Soul
you remember the
him.
Toy?
Oh, yeah.
That was some bullshit.
Yeah.
I liked it as a kid, but then I grow up and I look at it like, this is fucking horrible. Why in the fuck would, right. why would he do that? You dig? And I think it wasn't until people like, you know, I think Eddie Murphy came along and started to, like, even like Beverly Hills Cop could have been, you know, a different movie if it had a different motherfucker in it. It That's did right. not have to be what it was.
Mm-hmm.
There was every opportunity for that shit to be cheesy and for it to not go well. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Eddie brought the culture. Eddie brought exactly the demeanor, the mannerisms, the energy of black people and the culture and put it with Hollywood. And that's when we started to do things like that. Like, for instance, the clumps. When you have the clumps, okay, it, of course, you still have a black person in a professional setting. He's educated. He's a professor. And when you get to that dinner table, you can tell this is really how black people live. This is not in a white man's imagination of black culture and black lifestyle. That is why so many of our stars have kind of dwindled, because we have been forced, or we were being forced to fit into some shit instead of being allowed to stand out and, you know, and really connect with our base.
So you know how Eddie had he had such an amazing run, kind of the 70s, 80s?
Well, Eddie started in the 80s.
Right, is that what, early 80s, like maybe 1980?
Delirious, 84. Delirious was 84.
Okay.
I think he might have started in Saturday Night Live, 82, 83.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, so those early years, Eddie Murphy had, I don't know how long, where everything he touched was gold.
Absolutely.
Then he had this period that felt like he was a different person.
Mm.
Did you feel that?
I mean, I felt like he was a much wealthier person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And kind of had it, I guess, had an affinity for removing himself and like insulating himself, secluding himself from society.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the way Michael Jackson did. But that's not, I think that's because how people respond when everybody see you on TV and movies.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk outside, the illusion of that taps into a part of the brain that causes people to act irrationally.
Well,
I experienced
It's response.
Yeah,
right?
It causes people to act irrationally. So the natural human response to that is, I don't want to be bothered with this shit. I'm staying home. I'm going to find as many ways or as many excuses I can stay home as possible. And if I need anything, people can bring it to me. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to see me can come here to see me. I'm not going out there. Those people are crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, so that's why
well,
we
can
see,
at least imagine it.
Absolutely. That's what we see, like, the response of people like Michael Jackson, you know, Eddie Murphy, you know, even, you know what I'm saying, people like Dave Chappelle. You know what I'm saying? We at first think, man, why are they acting so crazy and weird? No, y'all acting crazy and weird and making them not feel comfortable outside of their own home. So I think that I saw that. But Eddie's always been funny. Like, if you just go look at Shrek.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? That fucking donkey is hilarious.
Hilarious.
Would think that you sit as an adult and laugh at an animated donkey?
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie Murphy can tap into no matter what age, no matter what race, you know what I'm saying? No matter what walk of life. And I think that's a talent that is now being recognized. And I think that now, you know, Hollywood or the industry of film and television is finally noticing mm-hmm. that black people can make movies only for black people. Even if white people can't relate. Even if y'all don't understand mm-hmm. everything about what's going on in this movie, it's okay.
That's right.
It's okay. It's all right because we don't understand a lot of the shit that go on in the white movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what the fuck Rambo was out there for. I don't know what the fuck that shit was for. I don't understand. I don't know why that shit was supposed to be interesting. You know what I'm saying? Commando and shit like that. I don't know why the fuck that shit was a blockbuster. Rocky. I don't know what's so fucking, you know, enthralling about a guy who got hit in the head so much where he can't talk straight. And his girl, it seemed like she's just as slow as he was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they kind of kept it together. Even Forrest Gump. What the hell is a black person supposed to understand about Forrest Gump? Nothing. But we still watch it. So just like we can take, and a lot of times that is the beauty of it, to be able to sit back and observe others and learn about how they do it and why they do it that way, and whether you agree with it, disagree with it, whether you can relate or not, it's still art. Everyone's story is important.
Well, it's, you know, there's the prerogative of the majority that often limits them.
Mm.
Right. So I was in Russia. I lived in Russia one summer.
Okay.
After college, or actually after my,
what year was this?
Sophomore year of college, 1995, summer of 1995.
So this is post-Soviet.
Exactly. It was 4 years after Glasnost.
Okay.
And kind of in the middle of, you know, rebuild, perestroika.
Okay.
But I was in Siberia.
Mm.
And I was, one time I was on a bus and I was with a guy who was
in a city.
It's called Krasnoyarsk.
Okay, Krasnoyarsk.
Yeah.
What I'm saying, so, but this is not like a rural, more like in the wilderness.
It was in the middle of Siberia, but it was a million people in 10 square miles. Very
damn,
dense. It was,
okay.
It was a socially planned
highly,
city.
The high density area.
Right, where they say, this is how we're going to build the city. This is where you're going to live.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, pretty directive.
Yeah. And that's a communist.
That was a communist influence. The architecture was terrible.
Mm.
The infrastructure was awful.
Why were you there?
I was there. You know, I was in college. I was doing a humanitarian mission.
Okay, gotcha,
right?
gotcha.
Working with mostly, it was an orphanage in Siberia.
Mm.
And so I'm on this bus with a guy who is my translator, and we're having a conversation, and this woman turns to him in Russian and says, "What language are you speaking?"
Mm.
He says, "We're speaking English." She says, "Are you students of the university?"
Mm.
He said, "I'm a student of the university, but this guy's an American."
Mm.
She goes, "He's not an American. Americans don't come to Russia."
Mm.
He goes, "No, no, he's really an American." He says, "Wouldn't you like to learn English?" And she says, "Why would only want to learn English? Everyone speaks Russian."
In Russia.
In Russia. In the middle of Russia.
Right.
You get the same. What was so profound to me is I listen to this woman speak, and it sounds like the answer I might hear in Iowa.
Mm.
Wouldn't you like to learn French? Wouldn't you like to learn German?
Right.
Wouldn't you like to learn Russian? Why would I do that? Everybody speaks English. Now, it's a little bit more true of English at this moment in time in history,
because right.
English is the international language.
Uh-huh.
But it was so eye-opening to listen to a Russian.
That makes sense.
Say, I don't know why. Everybody speaks Russian. And so what you're talking about is the prerogative of the majority
mm-hmm.
oftentimes leads to ignorance.
This is true.
Because life, as you know it, is shared by the majority of people that you encounter.
Yeah.
And so if you're growing up as a minority in any country,
mm.
then life as you know it might be different than the general culture.
This is true.
And so you're forced into a position of seeking wisdom, just like when we as Americans, one of the things that's so great about studying abroad
right.
is you go into a different culture and you say, why do they eat with their fork in their left hand? Why do they drive on the other side of the road? Why? And then you go through this whole list and then you say, why do we do anything we do?
Yeah. Yeah,
and so
yeah.
now it starts to open your mind and expand your soul. And so that otherness
mm-hmm.
forces you to reflect.
Right.
So if you're a minority, you're forced into reflection. Whereas if you're part of the majority, you're definitely not forced
well,
into reflection,
well,
which is a detriment. Like that's a detriment to your own soul expansion.
Yeah.
if you don't have that.
I can agree with that. I can definitely agree with that. I think that, you know, we have to come to these epiphanies in life that lead us to challenge the things that are around us, mm-hmm. you know, to have the freedom and the bravery to stand out as opposed mm-hmm. to just conform the conformity of fitting in. You dig?
Well, the joy of courage is a little understood joy.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing about courage is, you see, you get the courage after you do the thing that scares the shit out of you, not before. You don't have the courage beforehand. You know what I'm saying? You kind of have to face fear and say, okay, I'm afraid, but do this shit anyway.
And then that's the courage.
And on the other side of that, that's where the bravery comes from.
Okay, I agree with that. So you have to have courage.
You have a notion of courage.
And you have to exercise it. So you have to exercise courage in order to find bravery.
Right, right.
That makes sense to
me. It does.
Because the young warrior mm-hmm. may have courage, mm-hmm. but he doesn't yet have bravery. Bravery might be the place where you have a lot less fear.
Yeah.
Because you have self-belief.
You have
belief. From experience, you've learned that you have the skills to survive.
You can rise to this occasion. Mm-hmm. You've seen worse. You know what I'm saying? If you got through some shit, how about this? If you made it through a traffic stop where you had no license, smoking a joint, and it's a white bald head cop, Georgia State Patrol, and you make it home, when you get pulled over by APD, you got your license on you. Ain't no problem. Mm-hmm. The sum of my experience has told me I'm going to be okay. You dig what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So I think that is ever present in other parts of life as well. I appreciate you for coming by, man. It's not often I have an opportunity to speak with the owner of a film studio about so many different aspects of life. I appreciate that.
Well, it's not often I get to have the privilege of being interviewed by an international star.
Well, listen, man, what's present right now for Black Hawk? Who's filming right now there, if you can speak up?
Well, I can't tell you exactly the productions, but I can tell you we've got Universal.
Okay.
We have Netflix.
Okay.
We have Lionsgate. And we have Fox.
Gotcha.
And
that's like capacity for you.
Yeah, I mean, often capacity for us is three major films.
Okay.
But these were smaller, and so they needed less space.
Uh-huh.
And yet they still have the same number of crew members. So each production has about 300 crew members.
Mm.
So normally for us, like, full capacity is like 1,000 people.
Gotcha.
But right now, if everybody was out filming at the same time, which is more likely in a COVID world than a non-COVID world. In a non-COVID world, there's a lot more on-location filming.
Gotcha.
In a COVID world, everybody wants to stay on a campus and be insulated in the protection of that campus.
In a bubble, if you will. And then somebody has to sneak out and go get some lemon pepper wings, you know, from Magic City. Because that's just, you know, that's what we do.
I want to know when all the true stories of the NBA bubble will actually come out.
Probably next year.
Yeah.
Probably next year. When they have to make rules to compensate for the things that happened before the rules were created. The new rules that are being implemented will probably be a reflection of the old rules that they think should have been in place.
Yeah, the new rules will be made by all of the things that were broken.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world to me. So, I mean, do you think that there is any opportunity or there's any interest or potential in you yourself being a film developer?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You have any interest?
Yeah, no. We've done some small things as kind of like tests.
Right.
And we're working on some projects right now that I think are really interesting projects. Over time, we're natural film developers because we know all of the bodies that make all of the best content.
Okay.
And so being a film developer is not that different than being a real estate developer in the sense that the part that's hard is the vision. So being a real estate developer, the hardest part is seeing a piece of land, seeing a building, and having a vision of how it could make more money. What could it possibly be? Mm-hmm. After that, then you just need all the right connections, right? You need the right connections with architects. You need the right connections with financing. You need the right connections with construction.
Right.
Right? And you need to be able to fill out this talent base with all the right bodies. And then you can execute a real estate development.
Huh.
The same is true in film. It first starts with a blank sheet of paper, right?
Well, it starts with the script.
Like what? Well, that's but before there's a script,
there has to be a blank sheet of paper.
There has to be a blank sheet of paper, and you say, "Let's tell a story about the bloody summer."
Okay.
And then somebody says, "All right, who's going to write the script?" You're like, "I'll take the first draft. I'll try it. I might even just write an outline."
Yeah.
And then you might say, "But you know what? I have a buddy who's a writer, and for this amount of money, he'll make the script for me, and then I'll own the script."
Right.
But he will have done the work of writing the script. Because now you can pay for the development. So now if I have a script written by a professional writer, then I can go to professional directors and say, "Read this script and tell me if you'd want to direct it."
Got it.
And they might, and if it's a good script, they might say, "Man, I'd love to direct this."
But who's going
to
star in it?
Well, but that's why you get a director first, because now the director says, "I know just the people that should star in this."
Got it.
And he starts, right? So now that's how you develop. You attach all these bodies to a script, and now you have to get it funded. Now, if you have your own money, if you're Tyler, you just make what you want.
Or Ryan.
Or Ryan. Or Ryan. Or Ryan.
You know what I mean?
You just make it.
Don't speak ill of yourself, sir. You have the complexion for the connection if you have nothing else at all. You know what I mean? With my vision and your complexion, we can go places.
We can go places.
I
love that.
Hey, man, I really do appreciate your time. I know you have so much to do. You brought this lovely hat.
I thought you'd like it.
I love it. It says, "Fuck COVID." I'm definitely going to wear it.
Well, I found myself in...
And it's camouflage and bright orange.
Yeah, that's around May, June, I found myself saying, "Fuck COVID," like three times a day.
Yeah.
And so finally I called my sister and I said, "Make some hats." Yeah. And just say, "Fuck COVID." And so we actually pass those out to the productions as they come back online.
But it's a dope hat, though. Like, it's a dope hat.
It's good looking.
Yeah, it has a good shape, and, you know, the design of it, it has a little, what is this, Air Force little?
Those are the we have Black Hawk, the wings of that are on the Black Hawk logo.
Okay, so that's, okay, so you're
branding.
That's
the tie-in.
Branding. Mm-hmm. Man, you know what? You're on to something here, man. So, I think that we should probably get together. I'm going to slide you some blank sheets of paper that have some ideas on them, and then we'll figure out how we can work together on them.
I'd enjoy that.
All right. Well, we're going to together, Black Hall Studios and the community at large, of culture, I should say. We're going to work together to try to even the playing field of the stories that are being told and who they are being told to represent. I think that a meeting of the minds like this is very important, and we all have to work together and do the best we can to support one another.
I agree. It's a noble cause.
Right on.
And and ideally a lucrative endeavor, because that's the only way it gets multiplied.
Well, you know what? It's possible to do well and do good at the same time.
It's only possible to do good if you do enough well.
Yeah, that's real. So this has been another episode of Expeditions. Hey, listen, man, I got some exciting news. My show, Expeditiously, will now be available on Spotify, and it's free. If you already listen to music on Spotify, now you can listen to the podcast in the same place. Thanks for listening to Expeditiously with me, T.I.P. Don't forget to subscribe at Apple Podcasts and Podcast One, and rate and review, please.
Expeditiously is produced, engineered, and edited by KC Morris.
Hey, this is JJ French. Through 5 decades in the music industry, having sold over 20 million records, performed over 9,000 shows, and receiving 37 gold and platinum albums as a musician, manager, and record producer, I'm also an author, motivational speaker, marathon runner, inductee into the Long Island Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, guitar collector, and a founding member of a little band you may have heard of called Twisted Sister. Now I'm ready to share the secrets of my survival in one of the most vicious and predatory businesses on earth, the music business. In my new podcast, The French Connection, The Music Business and Beyond, on Podcast One. Get ready to hear real inside stories from me and my famous guests as they tell you how it's really done, not just in the music industry either. I guarantee that you will always learn something unexpected from successful survivors from many walks of life. That's the beyond part that I'm so excited about. Don't miss The French Connection, The Music Business and Beyond, with me, JJ French, Tuesdays on Podcast One, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.